Happy, happy Wednesday. I am so pumped. So pumped because this topic is near and dear to a lot of people who jump into real estate transactions. This still applies if you feel like you're doing a no money down deal, because we will be talking about documents, disclosures, and contingencies. I'll cover them in a snippet, but this more so is more focusing on, you know, just focusing on your due diligence, focusing on what you need to do. So I'm really excited about today's show. We are on episode 201. You know what to do. Press one. Let me know you're here. Press two. Let me know you shared it. Of course, say hi, say hello, drop a comment down below. And of course, if you missed it last week, we had a great show topic. Not only do we have a great show topic, but we hit 200 episodes. So I was able to that was really awesome. That was really, really fun. Before I jump into today's show, I do want to do show announcements. Okay, so let's time out. Let's get caught up, because today today's a show day, which means I get to talk about our upcoming workshop that is happening this Saturday. I've got a video for you. I'll just plug it in real quick here. Why you should be here. And invite a few people, whether you're a property owner, whether you're a renter, whether you're an inheritor, beneficiary, trustee, successor, trustee, executor, administrator, you need to be at this workshop. So it is a free community workshop, which means we are back. We are back. We are bringing our real estate workshops fourth Saturday. So there's two things going on. So I have our consumer workshops happening fourth Saturdays of each month, kicking off March this month. So happy spring, by the way. It's raining in some parts of the country, maybe snowing some part, like below zero in other parts. So hang in there. Happy spring equinox. This is supposed to be a, you know, new leaf, new you, new turnover, all that fun stuff. So I think it's perfect timing for us to talk about deed and mortgage fraud prevention. So we'll be talking about strategies. We'll be talking about new alerts and new systems put in place by the county recorder's office, what you need to do to participate in receiving those alerts and or notifications. And we're going to talk about the ugly side of deed and mortgage fraud. Albeit you've been a person that has been a victim of this, you've been scammed, you've been targeted, you're in the middle of it. So this is a great time for you to come and just really learn, gather some resources, and be able to take that with you and apply it to your life. I always say, I'm no good to you. Listen, I am sharing all this information, but I'm no good to you if you don't use it, right? Knowledge is power, but application is wisdom, is what I like to say. Knowledge is power, but application is wisdom. Applying what you learn is key. Okay, so I'm not going to harp on that anymore. All right, so let's get into disclaimers. Of course, the information used or presented on the show should not be considered legal or tax advice. Please seek those licensed, reputable professionals, legal and tax professionals. Of course, if I touch on loans, if I touch on real estate, of course, consult with your respective real estate team. Speak to your lending team directly about your transaction. Today, we'll be touching on that. Like, when you are attempting to speak to them and it doesn't work, what should you do? So we'll be talking about where to file those complaints, why people file those complaints, and really it's more preventative. So for those of you who are new to me, hi, hello, my name's Lisa Gillette. I'm also broker owner of Vivenio Estates. I'm your host, 200 episodes in, but I've got over 500 videos on our social media platform. Thank you for subscribing, whether you're new, existing, and you've been rocking with us for the last 5 years. Where did I get 25 from? Could you imagine it like 25 years in on social media? Woo. The future of social media. See, I was going to talk about just the power of social media as it related to these bank runs and other things. So I may leave it for next week. We will have a show guest next week. I've got someone who has got some political presence, as well as is a real estate professional and has a history. His track record has jumped into real estate very, very early on, bought multiple properties. In fact, purchased multifamily. And he'll share more as to why his story is important. So I'm happy that we're bringing a guest on the show. I am aiming to feature a guest at least once a month. I'm excited to bring that back, because if you recall when we kicked the show off, I think I went in like 62 straight episodes of independent contractors in this business. And the point of that really was to highlight the real estate careers in real estate that were not just a salesperson, that were not just the brokers, and that were just not just the agents and buyers. Because oftentimes when we discuss real estate, we hear the agent, the buyer, and the seller, and we are not clued in to there's an entire team that is operating behind, on the side, in the front, in the foreground, background, that is making that possible. This is a $1.2 trillion industry, trillion with a T, and that's annually. Not you know, over decades. This is a $1.2 trillion industry annually, and it's not just in commissions. That is the money generated out of this business. So this is why it's really important for us to discuss the good, the bad, the ugly, and that's what Ready, Set, Real Estate is all about. So welcome, welcome, welcome to the show. All right, let's jump into this. The good news is I'm doing classroom style. So yes, that means get your pen, pad, notepad, paper, tablet, notes on your phone as we go along, because I think this is a juicy one. I think this is a juicy topic because some of you have heard the story. Some of you, in fact, I've recently heard one. And so I said, you know what, let me bring this topic back again, because as long as real estate is around and as long as we're involved with people, right? It's agents and your brokers and your industry professionals are people too. And people do make mistakes, whether intentional or unintentional. This is why there's such a thing called E&O, errors and omissions, that can cover those omissions, those errors, and negligence, albeit it's intentional or unintentional, is a whole nother dialogue, right? It's a whole nother dialogue. Says the law student. This is the law student. All right, we're on episode 201 episodes. I'm proud to say we are going strong. So I am licensed in California and I'm licensed in Georgia, but I'd like to focus more so on this piece that was presented by the Department of Real Estate that was discussing common complaints. And really, it was this putting agents and brokers on notice about their fiduciary duties. And so I wanted to share this all with you because this platform, I'm connected with both real estate professionals and consumers who are learning the same. And so a lot of people jump into real estate because it's an industry that, you know, from what you see on TV, it's shiny, it's glamorous, it's exciting. There's a lot of money involved. And with a lot of money, right, more money, more problems. And this is why we should be having this much needed discussion on fiduciary responsibilities, duties, and things that both sides should be doing to protect themselves and to create a positive real estate experience for not just our consumer and clients, but also you as an industry professional. You are professing to be professional, right? You are presenting to be professional. And with that comes providing service. You are providing a service, all right? So I did reference here, it's dre.ca.gov. You can go to the Department of Real Estate website here or in your state and some of them refer to themselves as Bureau. In fact, once upon a time, California's Department of Real Estate was named the Bureau. I think that was during the Obama administration. And during the Trump administration, it reverted back to being called the Department of Real Estate. But overall, this is the governing body, governing agency that oversees the real estate business. Not so much the loan aspect. Yes and no, but that is a different department that heads that. So you run as the Department of Corporations and the Financial Institute as well that oversees the money aspect or the loan aspect. All right, cool. Cool beans. So when are complaints filed? Typically, we are seeing complaints are filed when one or two things happen or both. And it's usually after the fact, after the deal is done, that the buyer and or seller learns of some material issue. Material issues are so important in real property law. And real property is essentially just a legal way or legal term as we describe real estate. So in real property, material issues can be things like mold, disclosures of, you know, airport locations, disclosures of noises, pollutions, train, you know, a new coming train, like if you're aware of it. You should disclose it. You should refer or recommend that buyer client to look into the planning, right? City and planning in terms of transit systems and how that would affect where the property is located and adjacent or in respect to that transit line. That popped in my head because so going towards like my pharmacy in Inglewood, when I pass one of our main streets would be like Florence, and then the other street is, I turn up down it all the time. So like Florence and West Boulevard, but I thought about this because they have taken a strip of properties. They, the city, developers, you know, everyone's that's part of this, you know, transit, this, the new transit corridor and the stops that they're placing along the way. Now the transit is now in effect, it's running. But it's just interesting that when I reflect back many years ago, let's see, my daughter is 22. She'll be 23 this year. So this would have been 22 years ago when I look at these properties and I look at these communities prior to when the train, it was like the freight trains, cargo being placed on those trains running. And I remember those days. But now that you see it's transit and it's a people mover, it's interesting how we'll never see those houses again because these areas are being used for parking sites. We're seeing multifamily being built and there's just so much changes. So as I refer to material issues, right, after the fact, it's all said and done, people do come back and say, I wasn't told this. I don't recall being, you know, this was explained to me. And let's hold on that word. In fact, drop that in the comments below, explain. That's the common thing. That's new to me. It wasn't explained to me. And so that's the one. The other is when consumer complaints come in regarding required disclosures that wasn't made or was not made during the real estate transaction. So actually in the transaction and those required disclosures were not presented. If you are a real estate professional, you know you have a list of disclosures. I don't recommend foregoing, especially because this is a question as a broker. So you don't really see this on the side of the salesperson, but on the side as a broker, owner, and operator, we're asked in terms of our E&O coverage, we're asked, do we use a transaction coordinator? And if so, what percentage of transactions are you using using a transaction coordinator? Why that's recommended and why I'm recommending that as for real estate professionals is because that is just another pair of eyes, right? Don't lean not on your own understanding that you can dot the I's, cross the T's, and you can manage all your files. I get it if you're babysitting. My former broker used to say, stop babysitting your files and, you know, let your TC handle that. Of course, that doesn't mean you're not involved because even your broker's involved, right? That file is you know, scrubbed by your TC, and then that's sent over to the broker, and your broker should be scrubbing that file because they also too need to be signing off on that as well. Broker and or team and lead or manager, depending on how large the office is. So you hear there's already like a system in place that industry professionals should be following in terms of making sure disclosures are being presented, documents are being acknowledged, they're being signed, et cetera, right? But what happens? It doesn't happen. Doesn't happen all the time. You've got new agents who are trying to save, right? You're trying to save because it does cost. And some people pass that cost on for transaction coordinators to the consumer. It is essentially you hiring, right? You, the professional, hiring your TC to assist on your files. And so it has been, you know, different people run their offices differently. So some do charge it to the client, or the agents just, you know, factored in as a cost of doing business and pay the TC for those files. Okay, so top complaints. Let's talk about top complaints as to why the Department of Real Estate hears from the consumer population either during their transaction or after it's closed. And you'd be surprised that it has to do with the agent stopping communication. Go figure. They stop communicating right up into the point of opening escrow. All the while they've been like on it. They've been texting, they've been emailing, they've been following up, they've been doing great. The deal opens and the agent disappears. By a show of hands, how many of you heard that? How many of you experienced this? How many of you, as a real estate professional, have done this? Are you guilty of this? Have you disappeared? This is why having a system in place is very important, right? It's very important to have your system and a backup person, right? A partner, another agent, another salesperson, your broker. Hey, I'm going through stuff. Let them know I'm going through stuff. I've got doctor's appointments. I've fallen ill. I've been injured. I've got jury duty. I thought about jury duty because I missed my jury duty in February. It was during the time I was studying for finals. And I was like, yeah, no, I'm not doing jury duty. And when I called the court and they were like, oh, you were supposed to be in court today. And I was like, yeah, I didn't remember my login information. So they're going to ding me with a warning and put me back on the list. And so I'm waiting now for jury duty. Go figure. So doing my civil service, doing my civil service. All right. So if that comes up, right, industry professionals, if it comes up, you should be putting a system in place for that. Okay. Just in case, because life happens, right? And it's okay to apologize when life happens. In fact, I recently sent an apology letter to a client of mine, buyer clients of mine, because as I just mentioned, I was studying for finals. And as I wrapped up the fiscal year of 2022, it worked out timely for me that a lot of my transactions closed and I took a couple listings in December. And once that was done, January, February, I pretty much took the time out off in my real estate business to focus on studying for finals so that I could finish and successfully pass my term. And it came at the cost and risk of losing that particular client. And I get it. Not everyone's going to wait for you. And I'm perfectly fine with that. And I respect, right, the choice of that client. And so as I got back on track, I got my letter that said that I'd successfully passed. Again, you've heard me back on the workshops. You've seen me. I'm doing a thing. So we're back on schedule. And now, you know, and classes are starting for me. But it's more so more about time management and what's priority. Because for me, that is priority and important. And if I know I'm going to step away, which I said to the client, in the future, we'll make sure that no one feels left out and make sure everyone feels serviced and attended to, that we've added additional support to make sure that that client is hearing from us and whatnot. Again, this goes back to systems. Set the client expectation as to how often will they hear from you, right? Once a week, on Fridays, Mondays, Tuesdays, Wednesdays, Thursdays, Saturday, and Sunday. For me, I do let my clients know. I work half day Friday, half day Sunday. Half day Friday, half day Sunday. And I'm available 24/7 essentially for emergencies. Emergencies include death of a property owner, death of a borrower, and or those experiencing foreclosure, pre-foreclosure, foreclosure. So I do prioritize for those particular clients, and we have a system in play for that, right? We have a system in place. So I'm encouraging you to do the same. It's okay to acknowledge when something is going on, share that with your client, because otherwise you disappear and you're going to get a DRE inquiry by way of this complaint. In fact, by show of hands, if you're a real estate professional, press one. If you've received a DRE inquiry, have you been a subject of a DRE inquiry? I think if you've been in the this business long enough, you would likely get an inquiry from the DRE, whether it was not anything you did necessarily, but you're part of a real estate transaction with someone else, right? If you're doing business with other real estate companies, brokers, and or agents, you likely could be subjected to an inquiry that someone has made against that broker. I experienced that. In fact, it was in 2021. We had just spun off or just opened our brokerage, and we just founded our corporate structure as a broker, because I was already operating as a broker. So we just founded our corporate structure as a broker, and I did a real estate sale. It was a land transaction. So I represented the buyer of a land purchase. And it was very interesting that shortly after that transaction closed, as we're talking about, and I'm sharing my anecdotes and my stories as to how we come to hearing about these complaints or how someone makes a complaint. I received a DRE inquiry, and that's what it said. It just said, this is an inquiry that we're making. And they provided a long list of things they wanted from my files. They wanted me to answer this almost like a questionnaire and explain and provide supporting documentation for them to further scrutinize, investigate if need be. And so a lot of what they had asked of me did not apply at the time. And the questions asked of me were more so on the listing side, things that would have been provided by the listing broker, and it had to do with advertising. So that's what I'm hearing. Tends to be a popular issue with DRE, is not just complaints or inquiries or audits on trust fund handling, but advertising, right? Making sure your agents and salespersons are not violating the rules as it relates to advertising. It's very, very huge, okay? So with that being said, that was my experience on the DRE inquiry. It's not a pass or fail. It's, you know, nothing to be stressful about. Was I concerned? No. What I did in terms of protocol is I submitted that DRE inquiry to my E&O, right, to the insurance company, and said, I've received this notice, and I consulted with the attorney. They said to me, okay, great. You know, what do you have? What was the scenario? What was the transaction? And they guided me on providing, on writing a response. So I drafted my response. The attorney looked it over and said, yep, looks good. Go ahead and send it with your supporting documentation. Now, because my files are paperless and e-file, I think we submitted a drive. I think I submitted a flash drive. I just kind of copied and downloaded the file onto a flash drive and dropped it in the mail, sent it over to the Department of Real Estate, and that concluded that. So in the event you get a DRE inquiry as a real estate professional, make sure you are taking those steps to, I'm sure your broker will be notified. If they are not aware, make sure they are aware, because your broker is on your team. They're on your side to help and guide you through that. And also, you know, communicate with the E&O claims department so that they can get you in touch with an attorney. That way, if it does become an issue or a complaint, thereby in the legal form is essentially the start of a lawsuit. So you want to make sure you dot your I's and cross your T's. So far, finding this information helpful? Yes, press 1 down below. And again, make sure you're sharing and inviting someone, because getting all this game for free, 99. And it, like I said, whether you're new to the business or you're veteran to the business, you do this long enough that you will come across enough transactions and deals that I think that's what real estate studying, right? Studying real estate to pass the exam will not, cannot replace experience. The amount of things that I know has been based on those ugly experiences, and I'm so grateful for them because it's me putting my best foot forward and providing, you know, above service and going above and beyond. And oftentimes what I'm learning is either an industry professional, meaning an agent or a broker, doesn't like what I'm doing. And you know, that's a whole nother conversation. Or, you know, a consumer is greatly appreciative for what I'm doing. So again, we're talking about fiduciary duties. And for you as a consumer who is in real estate, you should be paying attention to what your responsibilities are and be familiar with what the agent's responsibilities are. All right, moving along. Number 2, this is a top common one, especially in the age of technology. Complaints are coming in because people are saying that the documents and disclosures were sent electronically. Now, how many of you participated in e-signing something? Absolutely, right? That's the new way. Gone are the days of printing documents, driving over to your client, or signing on the back of your in the trunk or on the hood of the car. I've done that, been there. Like I said, you've been in this business long enough, you would have experienced kind of the transitions. And even prior to me experiencing that window, I remember I've heard an agent share the story about when he first started soliciting for real estate business and essentially what he had to do, right? Like, had to go down to the MLS, get the list of properties, and then, you know, go and let people know. So, I mean, where we are today in terms of being able to announce events, announce, you know, listings like the MLS, and, you know, you have third-party websites, you have, you know, ad campaigns. There's just so many different ways to be able to communicate with people that we forget the most basic things. And this is going to be a lot more important as we learn, and I mentioned this on the last show, and I'm quoting something that I've read, that if you live long enough, you will experience a disability. And this is where I'm going with this. This is why this is important. Be careful to send over electronic documents to clients that may have disabilities, are either dyslexic, colorblind. You've got our seniors who would need a larger print. Be mindful of these. We're now moving into an arena, especially as we learn that we've got to be more ADA compliant in our business as small business owners, as entrepreneurs. ADA has to do with the Americans with Disabilities Act. So I want you to really think about that. You as a consumer, what are your needs? Your professional, we don't know, right? The agent would not know unless you say, please print the document, right? You don't necessarily need to disclose what your disability is. That's no one's business unless you want to share that. But how do we, you know, help us present the information, connect with you, explain, right? Help us do our disclosures in a way that you can better receive that information. Yes, agents oftentimes are sending things, you know, electronically because it's so instant, right? You can get that contract signed, e-signed very quickly, and then packaged and sent over and submitted. And you've done it all in a matter of, you know, 5 minutes before the deadline, especially when you're running up against deadlines. When you work under that pressure, that means you leave room for error when you're working that way. So what do I recommend? I recommend that you do it in two steps, in two parts. If you do have a client that has been receiving or communicating via email, then send out the documents as a separate PDF. Send it out as a separate PDF, because I was discussing this with a friend and broker colleague of mine, that not all agents, or not even agents, right? Not all agents nor clients know how to extract documents out of the electronic platforms, right? DocuSign, eSign, ZipForm, you know, there's various ones. It does give you the option when you receive that document electronically. There's like three buttons in the corner that allows you to extract that document, print that document without having to sign it. However, no one's giving a class on that, right? Your agent is not telling you how to do that, not explaining how to do that. It's, hey, I'm going to send this to you and you can sign on your phone. How cool, right? And yes, it's cool for the first time that you're signing with your fingers, but guess what happens is if you're looking at it on your phone, depending if you have an iPhone or your Android, this is just as large as those documents are going to be. So that is the issue. So sending those documents and disclosures electronically it's not a fair opportunity for that client to be able to read thoroughly the fine line when they're specially in font, depending on whatever font it is on their phone. That's a lot of legalese. That's a lot of information being presented to them that they're asked to sign, right? If you've never done this in California, our residential purchase agreements are 19 pages. And they can be more with addendums and more disclosures. So yes, we went from an 8-page, 6-page contract, 8-page contract, 10-page contract, 16-page contract to a 19-page contract. Every time that there's an issue, complaint, or a lawsuit, that means the legal team that has created a standardized form or forms in our industry revise those forms and they get longer. They get more longer. The good news is if you're a buyer, it's very buyer weighted, meaning there's a lot of protections in there for the buyer, not so much for the seller outside of liquidated damage clauses and the right to cancel, if you're not agreeing to request for repairs, you're not obligated to agree to it. And if you can't come to an agreement with the buyer, then the seller, yes, has a right to cancel the transaction. They're essentially saying the property is being sold as is. They don't have to agree to your credit repairs. They don't have to agree to your repair requests. If they do agree to it, now that opens a whole nother negotiation ball game and, you know, items to be checked off during the final walkthrough. Okay. All right. Moving along. Now, this falls on you, my dear friends, as a client slash consumers. This is one key important information that I have shared with our students who participate in our real estate boot camps and classes and workshops is, do we sign anything we have not read? So even my youth scholars, ages 10 and up, my youngest group, 10 and up, know that they should not be signing anything they have not read. Right? We oftentimes hear, put your name on the paper. First thing, put your name on the paper. Sure. Putting your name anywhere is so powerful because you're acknowledging the one of two things, right? Or one of two things that you've received it. For you to put your name on the paper means you've received it. You're acknowledging receipt, number one. That extra step is on you. To read it. When there's so much information, in fact, I just consulted a property management client this past weekend, and I shared with them, right? This is their first go at it, and I share this with all my clients, unless you're an experienced client. But here's one thing I can appreciate. I've got an investor client. In fact, a couple of them that I've noticed, even as experienced as they are, and we use standardized contracts, they read and treat that contract as it's the first time they are seeing it. So don't be fooled and think that someone has been in this business for many, many years and they just know. Why? Because someone can add a clause. We're able to add clauses. If my client says to add a clause, add a condition, add a contingency to that contract, beyond the standardized pre-printed legalese in there, it is also made part of the contract because it's been added. It's now an added clause. So it is your responsibility to read those disclosures and documents. Ask for the time. Hey, is it okay if I, you know, keep this document and then I can speak to my attorney, my tax advisor, you know, my team? Yes. The answer is yes, absolutely. I want you to be able to take time and read it. What I do for the most part is explain. Yes, I'm explaining and I'm going through, and I always defer to the client. If you want some good late night reading, even some sitting on the toilet reading, because most people tend to do that while they're on the toilet, which, by the way, doctors have said that's not really good for your rectum. Just TMI, right? Don't do that. But if you, you know, when you're involved in this, you've got to take it serious because there's money on the line. You're making one of your largest investments, largest purchases. And it has to do based on the terms of these contracts and disclosures. This way you can do what? Make an informed decision. Put that in the chat below. That way you can make an informed decision. That is where we're wanting to get you. If you're an agent professional and you lead with education, then you're going to be in good hands, right? Your client will be in good hands because they will be able to make an informed decision. They'll be able to feel confident about moving forward. Confident about moving forward. As an agent, don't be offended if your client asks you questions. They're not challenging what you know. They're seeking clarification. They need clarity about what they're doing. What does this mean? Right? What does this mean? Not just DocuSign it over to me. The other complaint is that the client signed documents on cell phone or tablet. So very, so separate, right? Two separate things. That one, that the documents are being sent over electronically by way of email. And we talked about printing those documents. Even I have done it, right? 16 years in, I treat every deal and every contract as the first time. I put my new agent hat on, my new curious agent hat on. I'm curious. I don't want to mess up. You want to be cautious. I'm doing my due diligence. So I do print my contracts. Even though I prepare them on the computer, I print them. When I get them back countered, when the agent counters me, whatever the transaction is between counter and, you know, counters and addendums and these additional disclosures, I print them. Yes, I know we want to be, you know, eco-friendly and save the trees, but the reality is there is more at risk at stake than, you know, how many trees we're cutting down, because this could affect your livelihood. Certainly could affect your livelihood. An omission, you know, just messing up could end up in, you can end, can put you in a legal situation that could wipe out not just you, but your brokerage if they're not prepared. So client signed documents on a cell phone or tablet, that has been the complaint, that you sent it over to them and you're expecting them to read and sign. And here's another issue. In fact, as I'm talking about all of these, I've experienced all of these by way of complaints coming from consumers, by other agents they've worked with. I had a senior who said to me, I accidentally signed the, he was canceling. We were assisting him through the cancellation process because the agent was essentially kind of holding him hostage. And I reached out to the agent as a courtesy and just says, hey, heads up, before you get a Department of Real Estate inquiry about what's happening. But this client wants out. He's a protected class. He's a senior. He's a veteran. And, you know, you're having him sign everything on his phone and he's not understanding this, right? Yes, there's three sides to a story, but I mean, certainly I'd appreciate it. And yes, the agent and the broker, it ended up becoming a broker call because the agent kind of wanted to be rogue. I mean, it's a wild, wild west out here sometimes when you really jump into this business. And so that's why I often ask people, you know, like, what side do you want me on? It's because it gets ugly. When I say good, bad, and ugly, it can get very ugly. And so through broker conversation, I explained and shared the client's position. The client was more than open to doing a conference call, but the broker, you know, who held him in that contract, or ultimately is responsible for that contract, said, you know what, you're working with him. It's fine. You know, totally understand. And I've had a candid conversation with the agent. Basically, you know, there's ways of servicing clients, and holding them hostage is not one of them. And that's to when I get into cancellation policies with people. Say we take a listing, or you hire me as your exclusive broker representative. Essentially, our conversation goes like this. We ask that you give us 24, 48 hours to resolve any conflicts or issues and or complaints you have about us. Allow us the opportunity to cure it, to resolve it. If we cannot resolve it, then we will cancel you out of that contract. And no harm, right? We can go our separate ways and move on. The reason being for me is my peace is important, my sanity is important, and I don't want to do business with anyone who does not want to do business with me. That's not how we get 5-star reviews, right? You don't force people to work with you when it's going bad, right? When you see it's going bad. Oftentimes when I do our consultations, and I encourage you as a service professional, as an entrepreneur, is you want to see if the temperament of between you and that client are even agreeable. Are you on the same page? Right? That's why that face-to-face meeting is so important, because you have that meeting of the minds. And I say all the time, that would kill a deal faster, right? You and the client not getting along on the onset will kill a deal faster than anything written in that real estate contract. It will kill a deal faster than any home inspection report that you get back. It'll kill a deal faster than any request for repairs that you get back. It'll kill a deal faster than any loan conditions or issues that you get back. Is if you and the client are not on the same page. That's essentially what we're talking about here. The other complaint is that the agent or broker did not explain the disclosures. They did not explain what they were sending. Not only explain, but your fiduciary responsibility as an agent and or broker is to discuss the possible consequences of what those disclosures, clauses, what it entails. No, you're not giving legal advice. No, you're not giving tax advice. But you know enough because you passed the real estate exam. The state determined that you have a level of competency to present this information to the consumer. Why we have a licensing process is not so that you can get out here and make your millions and millions of dollars in selling real estate. It's so that people are protected against your mess ups. That's why we have a licensing process. That's why there's take these three classes and then pass this exam. And pass a background check, not just a criminal background check. You've got to clear the Department of Justice. You've got to disclose if you haven't been, you've got liens and judgments. Character, moral character is involved when you're dealing with the consumer. So this is not just about, I'm licensed, I can get out here and sell. Which is one of my favorite questions to ask when I do the youth workshops. I asked him, do you think it's fair that your barber, your nurse, your cosmetologist, even your mortician are required to take more hours and have supervised hours in training than your real estate professional who has access to managing multi-million dollars, billions in real estate assets. Real estate agents get to take 3 classes in the state of California, answer 150 questions with a 70% passing rate, and pass a background check. No college degree required. Age 18. And you're out and released into the world. This is why broker training and oversight is very important. This is why the Department of Real Estate is not really lenient over broker oversight, right? You brokers are responsible for your salespersons who don't have the minimum experience as you do, because as a broker, you have to have a required minimum of experience. The ongoing conversation right now has been about changing the real estate licensing requirements. The conversation has leaned on adding more classes to making the exam harder so that there's a certain threshold, right? There's, again, minimum competency to enter this business. So overall, fiduciary duties by the agent or broker look like this. 1, exercising care, integrity, honesty, loyalty, and explaining what should be disclosed, significance of that disclosure, those documents, and its consequences. The agent must counsel their client, you, the consumer client, in either conducting or recommending any required inquiries. Again, if it's not your scope of expertise, agents or brokers, then you refer to those respective professionals, right? Consult with the inspector, consult with the city, consult with an attorney, consult with the tax advisor. Especially as we talk about, oftentimes people skip over the liquidated damages and mediation and arbitration clauses in the real estate purchase agreement. But it's so important for you to really understand that. Because recently it's been revised where a section of those clauses is no longer optional. What has become required now? It wasn't required before. So you have liquidated damages. You have a clause for liquidated damages. You have a clause for mediation. And you have a clause for arbitration. These 3 items are clauses that requires the buyers and sellers to initial in the purchase agreement. I'm referring to the CAR standardized contract. Prior to its recent revision, they were all optional, meaning the parties were not required to initial them. Now, going forward, mediation is no longer option. It's no longer an option. Parties have to participate in mediation if they are using the CAR standardized form. This jumps out to me. Why? Because I had a couple clients that have been in court after suing the buyer, and one suing the seller. I've had it in different scenarios. And what has come into play? The liquidation clause, the mediation clause, and the arbitration clause. Understand that if your clients agree to arbitration, they're waiving their rights to filing that complaint or resolving that issue in civil suit or civil court. Meaning they are waiving their right to appeal a decision. That decision becomes binding if they agree to go to arbitration. Mediation, $3,000 to $5,000. Arbitration, $25,000 to $50,000 or more that each party has to pay. So again, when we talk about explaining, disclosing, understanding significance, you too should understand the significance. You have access to a legal team, your E&O team, your broker. Don't just skip over the section. Yes, you can have your client read it and say, this is essentially, but please consult an attorney to really understand what your rights are and what this means. I have clients that say they will not be signing or agreeing to arbitration, right? They will not be initialing the liquidation damages. And so if you don't have a meeting of the minds in the contract going forward, then what happens to that contract? You don't have one. You don't have a contract. So this is why it's important to understand what your fiduciary duties are as an agent or broker. Now, as we get to and wrap this up, you've all been doing great. Thank you for being patient with me. As it relates to why you might lose your deposit as a consumer, your earnest money deposit is the money that you as a buyer submit to the escrow or settlement transaction, right? This is not the entire down payment, although sometimes it can be. In fact, I've had really aggressive buyers that were investors that submitted the entire purchase price as their deposit. Why would someone do that? Well, it tells the seller that they are serious, right? That they have very little contingency or no contingency, and they're serious in buying the property without considerations of backing out. Now, the deposit, now some sellers may negotiate by way of their agent would ask for an increased deposit, right? At minimum, they'd like to see 3% of the purchase price. Why is that? Why would they be asking for 3% of the purchase price as a deposit from you as a buyer? Well, because if you look again at our standardized contract, that liquidated damages clause states that if you, the buyer, breaches the contract, then they are able to keep up to 3% of the purchase price. Have I had clients put in less? Yes. Have I had clients put in more? Yes. Have we had clients almost on the verge of losing that deposit? Yes. And why is it? It's usually by actions of not following their contract terms. And sometimes other things happen, right? I don't want to, you know, if you want to hear my stories, call me. 323-488-3265. I'm not going to put, so sad. You know, there's some situations that are just kind of like, whoa. But this liquidated damage clause is why. Now, how do you avoid this from happening? You read your contracts. You follow your timelines. You've got to pay attention to your timelines and your contingencies. Oftentimes what we do is we summarize, right? And I use a system. I've got a system that I assign duties, to-dos and checklists. I mean, because I love it. It's like it's a project management system that we use to keep our sellers and our buyers on task. Like, hey, deadline's coming up. Hey, contingency's coming up due. Meaning if you sign to remove that contingency, it's no longer a protection we have. What are we protecting? Your deposits. Now, if you go into a real estate transaction and you are not paying attention to your timelines, right? Yes, it is, you know, you're leaning on your agent, but you too are a part of this. You've signed a contract, right? That contract says that you're going to close escrow in 30 days and you're now on day 45. You're in breach of your contract if you didn't request for an extension of time. If you need more time to do your inspections, your home inspections and access property information, and you only wrote your inspection for 7 days, but you haven't completed everything, or you still need to get your report back from your inspectors, then you should be requesting an extension of that time. Extend your inspection contingency. You can't wait on your inspection and then order your appraisal. Those times are running simultaneously. They're running concurrently. So what does that mean? As you're doing your home inspection, you're also waiting on your appraisal to be completed. If you're still waiting on your appraisal report to come in, because appraisals have been backed up, they've been busy, if you're waiting on that for whatever reason, it's taking longer, then your 10-day, 12-day, 17-day window, then you should be requesting what? An extension of that appraisal contingency. The paragraph itself has something called time is of the essence, meaning each party is going to act in good faith and reasonably, right? Well, in good faith and reasonably to respond, to get those reports done, to get their final loan approval, to get their financing in order, to make the property available and accessible. That is also seller duty and responsibility. You can't just say, time's up, right? The contract has set forth how you deal with that by way of giving notices. You've got to give a notice. Say, hey, you've run out of time. I'm sending a demand for you to perform, right? Either side, you send your demands, your notices to performs, and then you send your cancellations. There is a way through the contract of how to get through canceling. And ultimately, if you are seeking to hold this, the buyer's deposit, that does, and you're an escrow is going to draft that amendment as well. So not only will you have it on your standardized contract and cancellations that says we're either agreeing to cancel, but we're having a dispute of who gets the deposit. It's important that agents and buyers and sellers understand that the cancellation form is a two-part form. It's not just we cancel, you get your deposit. It is subdivided into two sections. One is canceling the contract if you have a reason by the contract terms to cancel it. And number two is a return of the deposit and or who gets it. It's a partial return. It's less expenses and or there's a current dispute. It's two parts. But if you have your client who says, I want my deposit, and the seller says, no, I want to keep it, and you have the client sign in both sections, you made a big oopsie. You've created a big error because what you've done is authorized the release of their deposit when there's a dispute of it. All right. That's my time. Here we're going to wrap up with what you can do. So if you're an agent, if your agent is not meeting their fiduciary duties, contact the broker of record, ask them for that. In fact, I've gotten a lot better because I run into, cowboy agents who are just wilding out. And so I now make sure that I have the broker's contact information when we start our file. When we get into escrow, I need a phone number. I need a current phone number. I don't want a ghost number. I don't want some random phone number that goes into the abyss. I don't want a generic email that goes into the abyss because I've experienced that and it's no fun trying to track brokers when you're trying to get a handle of your real estate transaction. No fun, right? And that also is a responsibility of the boards. The local boards are supposed to have the current contact information for the broker of record in order to register them and have them participate in the MLS. So make sure everybody's doing their part here. A second, send an email for separate PDF documents or printed documents. Ask, can you please print this out? Do you mind if I come by your office and pick it up, right? Pick up a printed copy. Don't expect that when we send documents, one client, the escrow had sent her escrow documents electronically and she printed those documents. And I was like, no, that's what escrow is for. Just ask them. Say, no, don't email me anything. Please mail it to me. They do ask you, how would you like to receive your opening escrow packets? Do you want it emailed or do you want it mailed? Now, in the world of you thinking you know everything as a consumer or a client, these documents are not 5 pages or 7 pages. These are packets. Right? Because they're going to give you your preliminary title report that can be anywhere from 20 to 50 pages. They're going to give you disclosures. NHD disclosures can be anywhere from 80 pages. Environmental earthquake reports or disclosures. These are packets, y'all. Don't say, oh, just email it to me. Unless you feel confident about signing it that way. Okay. Also, follow up with questions over the phone and email or text. Okay, if there's something you didn't understand, send your agent and or broker an email. Hey, I wasn't sure what you meant. Can you please clarify? Can you confirm what that meant? What does that mean? Should I XYZ, right? That way the agent can provide more guidance onto directing you onto who you should be consulting if it's out of their scope. I've also mentioned contact the escrow officer regarding electronically sent documents. Again, you can ask the escrow and title. If you're using a title settlement for services, you can ask them, can you mail that stuff? Even when you have a mobile notary, what do? They bring you your copy and say, this copy's for you. This is your copy. And when you're signing your loan documents, essentially nothing can happen. for 3 days to give you a 3-day window. That was a law enacted to protect you as a buyer, that even when it's all said and done and you're at loan doc signing, the notary presents your copy and says, this is your copy. And you have 3 days to review this. If there's any errors or revisions that you need to make, contact your lender, contact your agent, contact your escrow team so that they can address it immediately. And although I think I shouldn't have to say, but I do, I will say, because all, you know, what does it say? Common sense is not common knowledge. Read before signing. Read before signing. You owe you that much. You owe you, not me, not the agents, not the escrow, not the brokers. Why? Because as I've been studying as a law student, there is a very, very landmark case that it was a real estate deal between a contractor who was getting a house built and whatnot. And he signed the documents and it ultimately went to court. And the end result was the court said, because not reading is not an excuse to void that contract or cancel that contract. So just because you didn't read it is not a reason, is not a defense. Not a legal defense. So you've got to read it. And finally, if all else fails, file a complaint with the State Department or Bureau of Real Estate. They do have a section that says submit a complaint, and you can go ahead and put all information in there, and they will open an inquiry and or investigation to look further into your complaint. All right. Okay, that's my time. Thanks for sticking around. You have been fantastic. Make sure you subscribe, follow, and hit that like on all our favorite social media platforms. Thank you for listening to our radio podcast. Again, you have been tremendous to our growth, to just inspiring me to continue to do what I'm doing. And again, thank you, thank you, thank you. We'll see you next week. Yes, that's right. We'll see you next week for another information-packed episode on Ready, Set, Real Estate. Bye.